Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the secret ingredient for effortless success. And the numbers to call to talk about effortless success or just to get coaching on having what you want, thriving in every area of your life, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to begin, as always, with a bit of a table setting from me. And just talking about what is this secret ingredient for effortless success. And let me kind of go back and explain every bit of that title. Because when I first suggested to my agent that I was going to do a CD set called Effortless Success, which available now from hayhouse.com, my agent was like, you can't do that. And I was like, why not? And he said, I see you do stuff. And I said, okay, I'll call the CDs Seemingly Effortless Success. And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, the reason I call it that isn't because you don't do stuff. Of course, everyone does stuff. That's how you create stuff, right? You want to build a house, you're going to have to show up and you're going to have to do stuff. But the effort is how much of an act of will is it to do it? How much of your energy is spent getting yourself off the couch and into action? How much of your energy is spent overcoming your inner demons to try and go out and make something happen? That is effortful success, right? That's the go, I can do this, and I'm going to put myself on the line, and I'm going to mortgage my home, and I'm going to... And my agent said, you know what, effortless success is a way better title. Let's go with that. So Effortless Success was a CD program I put out in, I think it was like 2006, 2007. And it's been consistently, people tell me that they listen to it again and again. And I did a workshop once, and the British judo champion came and told me that Effortless Success was the secret of his, his judo-ness. And you know, we've had lots of great stories of people who were able to go out and create great things, but to create them not from a place of intense and horrible effort, to create them from a place of well-being, to create them from a place of relative ease, to create them with a sense of what you might call effortless effort, where you are doing stuff, but it doesn't feel like hard work. You're doing plenty of things, but it doesn't feel like you're struggling to get by. And the secret ingredient is not so secret, right? The secret ingredient is inspiration. But what inspiration actually is and where it comes from is a really interesting topic of conversation. Because, so there's a quote that Thomas Edison is famous for, which is that, invention is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And I think that's very useful for people to realize, because a lot of people hear something like effortless success and think, oh, good, because I don't feel like getting off my couch. Well, no, that's magical success. Right. And I am literally unaware of anyone who has attained magical success. You know, yes, I've met a couple of people who bought lottery tickets that paid off, but that's pretty much it. And I wouldn't really call that success. They just won the lottery. Right. There is no way that I am aware of. There is no story that I have firsthand seen of somebody who didn't do anything and created something worth seeing in the world. But I know so many stories of people who did a lot with effort and did a lot without effort. So give you some kind of contrasts. So there's a CEO that I've worked with, and he is the master of effortful success. So he works harder than anyone I've ever met. He gets up in the morning and pushes himself and pushes himself and pushes himself, and he pushes everyone around him, and he has achieved a very high degree of financial success. He has had, as I don't know his full health history, but he has had heart attack. He has had diabetes. I think he still does have diabetes. He has other health issues. He's on his third marriage. He's estranged from at least one of his kids. But boy, he's made a lot of money, right? That would be not effortless success. Now, another CEO that I've worked with, when at the time that I worked with him, he actually had seven companies that he was running, three of which he was taking public. But he had such a sense of ease about him. He had such a sense of well-being. His relationships with the people in his employ and the people around him were just great relationships, the kind of relationship you'd love to have with people. And he came to work on a regular basis, kind of excited about what the day held. He was an example of somebody who was experiencing effortless success, but he was still doing a lot. If you looked at his calendar, you'd go, wow, you do a lot. So that's the 99% perspiration part. But here's how I've always made sense of that quote, given what I see in the world. I don't know if you've ever gone to Home Depot or one of those, like a hardware store where they mix paint for you. They'll match paint to a certain color. Well, the first time I did it, I was fascinated, because what they do is, it wasn't like they had all these paints ready to go because there's so many different colors. Is what they did is they had white paint, and they had a formula for what colors you needed to mix into the white paint to make it the color you wanted. So we were doing a burnt orange for something. And I remember going, and they got this big can of white paint, and they put in a few drops of red and a few drops of, and I'm not even going to try, a few drops of whatever color you mix with red to get orange, and a few drops of something vaguely brown. And basically they put in about 8 drops of color, put the lid on the can, put it in some machine that shook it up and shook it up and shook it up. And voila, a couple of minutes later, you had a can of burnt orange paint. And I looked at that and I went, that's the relationship of inspiration to perspiration. Less than 1% of the content of the paint was the color, but 100% of the color of the paint came from that less than 1%. And that's what inspiration does for your creation. You still have to do the work. You're still going to put in the hours. Now, they probably will be different hours, because they're not spent working on yourself. They're not spent pushing yourself. They're actually just spent engaged in whatever it is that you're engaged in. But that 1% of inspiration creates 100% of the richness of your creation. It's the fuel for the whole thing. And that's what's kind of important to know, that effortless success does not mean sitting on your couch. In fact, it probably means doing a lot compared to what a lot of people do. But it does mean not doing it from a place of fear, not doing it from a place of insecurity, not doing it from a place of desperation. It means finding that inner source of inspiration. And that's what I'll talk about a bit later in the show. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the United States, you can dial 001-760-918-4300. And we will begin outside the United States in Melbourne, Australia with Helen. Helen, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking the call. Yes, in Melbourne, Australia, fair way from you.
Yes, a fair ways.
And I'm a virgin caller, so I've been listening to you for quite a while, but not ringing in. So there you go.
Well, I'm going to get, we keep promising we're going to get a bell to ring when we get a new caller, but we'll ring one in memoriam at some point in
okay.
the future.
Okay, ding, ding. Michael, this is a perfect talk too for the reason I'm calling in. So I'm a big fan. I've been listening to you for a while, and I'm actually doing the Living from the Inside Out program, and I love the access there. It's awesome. It's just fantastic content, and the Transformative Book Club is amazing. I love all of that. So thank you for bringing that into the world and making it accessible.
You're very welcome.
Good. And I think the reason I'm calling in is that it's really a good topic because I have an amazing ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. I seem to, I do struggle street. I have a fantastic business concept. And I do run my own business, but I'm incredibly inspired by it. It's a really fantastic product that I bring into the world. It helps dogs. It helps people with their dogs. But I just seem to, every time I get my kind of mojo up, I just kind of seem to find a way of sabotaging myself. So to put it in context, I have been through a complete business failure with one part, with a concept behind this idea. So, I'm kind of like, I get the right people, and then all of a sudden it seems to have something that pulls it back. So it's unrecognized thinking. I don't know what it is.
Well, let's see. Let's do a little bit of exploring, because I think people are very quick to self-diagnose and then set about trying to solve a problem they made up they had. And personally, I don't tend to believe in self-sabotage as a diagnosis. I understand where it comes from because it looks like somebody's acting against their own best interests, but it only looks like that when I've looked closer. So give me an example of what it is that you think you do to self-sabotage.
I've been through a pretty rough period for a couple of years, through losing both my dogs and cancer. So kind of, I just came out of a very dark period, and I said, well, it's time to start this again. So the business just kept going, and it turns over a modest amount of money without me really doing very much to it. So I've been wandering around looking after other people's dogs for a little while and just went, well, the business is doing well. It's actually tracking up. You know, the sales are increasing, without me really doing very much. So time to once more, gird the loins and jump in and start doing stuff. So I've taken an apartment and, gone. I've got a business coach, and I've got, things, not spending a lot of money, but then all of a sudden the sales go down, which creates an enormous financial stress. So there's no money to do a lot of things. And I think I get into overwhelmed then about what's the next step, what's the best step to do. So I start an action and then I pull back from that. That's not the best thing. That's not going to make that the difference. So that's why I get into a kind of wheel spin. I feel like I'm doing the same thing again that I've always done and not get into success. So my self-talk and my thinking becomes negative.
So let's back it up. And I'm assuming that you'll tell me if I push too hard.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm cool.
So why do you have to gird your loins?
That's part of the thinking, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I gird my loins personally, when I'm going to get my blood drawn. I'm not that into that. I sometimes gird my loins at the dentist. The idea of girding my loins before going out for a nice meal, or girding my loins before going to a movie I really want to see.
Yep.
Like, that would make no sense. What is it about how you are making up work in your head that makes it seem like something one needs to gird one's loins before doing?
I guess that's the crux of it. It is that unrecognized thinking that goes on in it, and bringing that to consciousness so you don't think that. I go, business is a full contact sport, and trust me, I get full contact. So I guess that's where I think I need to protect myself from disappointment or from, hardship, rejection within it. You put yourself out in the marketplace, and there's always you know, it's challenging. So I guess that's why I'm kind of going into protection.
This is great. Because I've got this one, right?
Okay, cool.
Wow. For me, it's disappointment. Disappointment is the one where I kind of do a little dance and go, God, if I really go for it, and then what if it doesn't work? And
that's right, yeah. Oh.
But here's the thing, is I kind of know that that's nuts.
Yeah.
Because the only way I'm ever going to feel disappointed is when I'm thinking disappointing thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, I can do that no matter how successful I am. Like,
you know,
I really noticed that one year. I had my best year ever financially in the business. And I was walking down the street on town Kensington High Street in London. And I
know it, huh?
And I was thinking, okay, so I did this much this year. So next year I'm going to do. And like the deeper part of me heard myself kind of setting the next target. And just, I thought, no, that's interesting. When is this going to end? Am I supposed to just keep setting higher targets until I fail and then feel bad about failing? And I realized, wow, there's a real disconnect. There was a real disconnect in me at the time between why I was in business and what I was doing in business.
Right.
So I assumed I must be in business to make money. Like that was the purpose of the business. But the prerequisite was, well, I had to not hate it.
Yep.
But when I looked at it, I realized, actually, maybe that's how you're supposed to do it. I didn't know. But actually, the purpose of my business was making a difference in the world. And the prerequisite was it had to make money.
Okay.
Now that, for me, when business stopped looking like my survival mechanism and started looking like my contribution and service mechanism.
Yeah.
I showed up differently because I love contributing and I love making a difference.
Mm.
And it started to look to me, and I'm just telling my story now, but I think it's relevant. It started looking to me like when I was feeling, you know, like holding back, and it was always when I was focusing on what I could get, not what I could give. Now, that wasn't self-sabotage. That was just misdirection. That was just looking in the wrong place.
Yeah.
You know, there's a, I think it was a Samuel Johnson quote, the you know, from sort of Shakespearean times, that, you know, obstacles are those horrid things one sees when one looks away from one's goals. Like, you know, we can do that. Right. We can all do that from time to time, and we can get caught up in what it means about us, and we can get caught up in our thinking about, you know, money and survival and all that. But see, this is the question. If you are in business to survive, then it's never going to go great.
Yeah.
You know, you might survive.
Yeah.
Right. It might work. Using air quotes. But if you're in business to like you clearly have a love of animals.
I do.
Right? And my guess is that your business really helps people who love animals to have their animals around longer and better and richer experiences of them.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
And I feel very confident in guessing that when you're focused on helping people have the love, you know, that loving relationship with their animals for a longer time with less worry, you probably love your business.
Yeah. Yep.
So
I do. I love that part.
Okay.
Quite
so
nice.
That's the secret ingredient right there.
Yep. Yeah.
When you're riding that, people can feel that. They feel your passion. They feel the genuine love and care you have for them and their pets. And they respond to that in a way that is beyond linear, right? They don't respond to that, okay, well, you did 5 units of effort, so I'll give you 5 units of reward. One unit of that kind of loving, caring output will bring back a multiple of rewards. Because people can smell it. Right? They can smell desperation and fear, and they can smell the love.
Yeah. And it's when the desperation of fear kicks in, the desperation about, you know, survival, which is a pretty, it's a pretty mean taskmaster, that one. Kicks in. I see it just takes you down that rabbit hole of despair and all that. So, yeah.
See, I don't know anyone who does their best thinking when they're scared. And if you know that, then that doesn't mean you'll never be scared again. It means you don't see fear as an important part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, from time to time, when you get caught up in some thinking, you're going to feel scared. Like I had somebody say to me yesterday, I was doing an interview, and she was asking me about this project she was taking on, and she had a lot of passion for this project. She was clearly incredibly inspired about it and really felt like she would make a difference to women and to couples around the world. And she said, but when I go to record a podcast or when I go to do a talk, I get really scared. And I said to her, that's like telling me I really love what I do and I'm really committed to what I do. And sometimes when I do it, I'm wearing a red shirt. Like, yeah, me too. Sometimes. And then sometimes I'm wearing a blue shirt. And when you see that, it's not self-sabotage, it's just getting caught up in some unhelpful thinking from time to time.
Yeah. So following that, then when you're in that, you know that the unhelpful thinking is going on. And that's the other kind of tale of it, isn't it? That's like when you're in that, you know, I'm really aware of when I'm feeling, you know, something, fear, you know, whatever that negative emotion, whatever word you want to put on it. You know, I know that my thinking is going on. It doesn't necessarily mean I can change the thinking then and there. So it's just that.
No. So have you ever had other run flat tires or the tire, I can't remember what they're called, but there's a kind of spare tire that's not quite as good as your regular tire. So when you've got
I know that one.
Yeah. So when you have that tire on, you know to drive your car more carefully.
That's a great analogy. Yeah.
Right. Well, so when you're feeling out of sorts, you know to move forward a little bit more carefully. Yeah. You don't want to, you know, do your speediest moves. When you've got those tires on. But the difference between us and the car is the tires change themselves.
Yeah. Cool.
The tires are self-inflating. So even though they can go down, they'll also fill themselves back up. We're remarkably buoyant. We are remarkably resilient. Just knowing, hey, when I've got my run flats on, when I've got my spare tires going, when I'm a little out of sorts, I'm just going to drive a little more carefully than when I've got my full tires. And when I got my full tires, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to get everything out of the car I can.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good analogy. Yeah. It's not let that stop. It's just to keep going through it, but just go.
Yeah, you don't stop driving. You just drive a little bit more defensively.
Yeah. That's cool. That's really cool, Michael.
Very cool, Helen. Thank you for phoning. I'm glad. I'm glad we finally meet voice to voice.
Voice to voice. Yes. Thanks, Michael. You're awesome. Love your work.
Bye. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
You know, this is. I assume this is true for you too, right? I assume you sitting at home or sitting in your car or walking in nature or listening, however you're listening. I assume that you, from time to time, with your work, get caught up in thinking about what it's going to do for you, what it's going to save you from, what it's going to, you know, make okay that otherwise wouldn't be okay in your life, who it's going to prove that you're not a worthless piece of crap to, or whatever, right? Everybody's got some thinking like that. But so what? The fact is that as soon as you get back in touch with why you're really doing what you're doing, with that sense of inspiration and possibility inside you, your experience changes like that, right? There's no long process. There's no reconditioning needed. It is that simple. We all do really well when we're focused on the task at hand, when we're focused on the person in front of us, when we're focused on the contribution that we can make, not necessarily the contribution we ultimately want to make. And we all struggle when our energy and attention is on us, on how we're doing, on are we good enough, on what if this happens and I can't. Right? Nobody does well from that. You know, I was teaching, I can't remember what program it was, but I was teaching on some program and, you know, it came up. What's the opposite of self-confidence? Now think about that for yourself. What would you say is the opposite of self-confidence? Well, the way it looks to me, the opposite of self-confidence is self-consciousness. Self-confidence is what we call it when we're not thinking about ourselves. We're not worried about ourselves. It's not about us. We're just there. In some ways, it sometimes feels when people describe those flow experiences, they describe it as though there. It was like I wasn't even there. It was just happening. Right? And we would describe that. Somebody else would describe that as, God, he's so confident. My goodness, she's got so much self-confidence. She just radiates ease. Well, that's actually what's naturally there when you're not drowning in self-consciousness, when you're not totally up in your head trying to figure out what's wrong with you and how to fix it. Right? You take, generally speaking, you take a room full of six-year-olds and you say, okay, raise your hand if you're really good at dancing. And all the six-year-olds raise their hand and go, me, I am. And then they get up and do these dances and you go, wow, that was not good. And then you say, okay, who here is really good at singing? And all the six-year-old goes, me. And they get on, the sun will come out tomorrow. And you're going, oh, good, dear Lord. But boy, they have no self-consciousness and absolute confidence because it's innate. It's in our nature. Well, then you go back to the same room of kids at the age of 8 or 9. How many of you are good at singing? And 3 of them raise their hand, and it's because they probably are pretty good at singing, right? And they're, you know, how many of you are good at dancing? And you know, 2 of the girls and none of the boys raise their hand because the girls have been told that they're good at dancing and the boys don't want to admit it, right? Well, that's what happens. At some point, we buy into not only our thinking about ourselves, but we buy into the fact that it's valuable to think about ourselves, that we should think about ourselves, and we should think about ourselves in a certain way. One of the things that I find fascinating is the athletes who discover that they play their best when they're not thinking about how they're playing. Now, that's in stark contrast to the athletes who think they play their best when they're thinking exactly the right thoughts and feeling exactly the right feelings. Because for those athletes, when they are thinking exactly the right thoughts and feeling exactly the right feelings, they do play really well. But if their thinking is a little bit off that day, if they're not in the right state of mind, they can't play. And in sports, they have a name for that. They call them head cases. Because you can't rely on an athlete who can only play when they're in a good mood. You can't rely on it. Like, okay, I'm about to talk crap because I have never been in the military. But if I was, I would not want my patrol's welfare to be dependent on people's mood that day, right? If I'm in construction and we're doing an important part of the construction where things could fall over and hurt people, I don't want how it goes to be dependent on the in-the-moment mood of my crew. And in fact, any crew that works well, any sports team that plays well, they play well because that's not where their attention is. Their attention's on the game. And that's us too. What makes success effortful is when it starts to become about us, right? So we think, okay, my goal is to get from here to there. I can do this. I believe in myself. I think I can. I will. And we start out boldly in the direction of wherever it is that we're heading. And then we start to think. We think, oh boy, when I get there, that's going to show my mom that she was wrong about me. That's going to show my dad that he was wrong about me. That's going to show my husband, wife, lover that they're wrong about me. That's going to show Timmy from the third grade that he was wrong about me, and Jessica should have dated me. And then that same thinking that seems almost empowering, because it's like, yeah, turns on us. And it becomes, yeah, but what if I'm wrong? What if I don't make it? And what if I prove Timmy right? And what if Jessica really was better off with him? And what if my mummy and my daddy and my this and my that were right? And then it's harder and harder to keep our legs moving. It's harder and harder to stay in the game. It's easier and easier to rethink it. You know, maybe this wasn't such a good idea anyways. You know, maybe this isn't my purpose in life. Because surely if this was my purpose in life, I would just be inspired all the time and I would just do it. You know what? Let me go try and figure out my purpose. Let me go try and figure out what I'm meant to be doing. Let me go back to school and study this more. And we find a million ways to not take the next step, to not engage with what's in front of us. And the irony is that pretty much all it takes to move forward is to engage with what's in front of you. Because when you're engaged with what's in front of you, oh, the intelligence of life. I feel like the beginning of a Dr. Seuss novel. Oh, the things you'll see, right? Because suddenly, when you're engaged in the moment, you become a vehicle for the universal creative force. You become a conduit for creativity itself to come through. And all sorts of things occur to you and through you that no linear, reasonable business plan could take into account. We do a program every year called Creating the Impossible. It's going to be my new book for Hay House in 2017. And I was talking yesterday, I was doing some interviews with a man named David Key, and he did our Creating the Impossible program, and he invented something. So he decided his impossible goal. So the game is, right, here's the game, the Creating the Impossible game, is you choose something that you think you've got less than a 20% chance of succeeding at in 3 months, in 90 days. So it's something, but that you'd love to bring into the world if you could, right? You'd love to be able to go at the end of the 90 days, look at what I did, but you think it's beyond unlikely. I actually encourage people to go further than 20%. Like, you know, the people who play Full Out choose something that they'd love to see happen, but they're pretty convinced couldn't happen. Like, even if they worked as hard as they know how to work 24 hours a day or 18 hours a day, that wouldn't be enough to bring it into being in 3 months. And then we invite people to show up each day and do what's in front of them as if they could. To show up to the project each day and follow that day's inspiration. Step into that day's opportunity. Take the next step, no more, no less, knowing that when they do, the next step will be revealed. In my first book, You Can Have What You Want, I talked about it like a soul path. The path of the soul, because it really seemed to me when I saw my clients who were effortlessly successful, not that they didn't work, they work very hard, but that it wasn't hard work, that it was an effortless effort. They were inspired to do so much of what they did. They were engaged in a way that made it engaging to do what they do. That their lives unfolded as if by design. They would bump into just the right person at just the right time to help them with their next step. And David Key's story of creating this amazing thing called the G-Pot was a story of effortless success. It was a story of somebody who didn't even know what his project was going to be, just signed up for Creating the Impossible because he thought this sounds fun, and had no idea what his project was. And then the day everyone's supposed to announce their projects, he's at dinner. He's telling me this story yesterday. He's at dinner, and he suddenly goes, his mother-in-law wants seconds on the potatoes and the roast, and she says, the gravy's cold. And he says, oh, I'll take care of that. And he pours the gravy into a teapot, puts the teapot in the microwave. And this being England, his mother-in-law is horrified by this. And you can't do that. That's a teapot. And he gets the idea. Oh, what if I combined a gravy boat with a teapot? And his wife, clever woman that she is, went, you could call it the G-pot. And so it was born. Now, understand, David had no experience in manufacturing. He had no experience in ceramics. He had no experience in retail. He just had an idea that he thought would be really cool. Hey, what if I could invent this thing and get it into John Lewis? So we were debating what the American equivalent of John Lewis was, and we decided Macy's is probably the American equivalent of John Lewis. It's a nice upscale, not super duper posh, not Harrods posh, not Neiman Marcus posh, but it's an upmarket, very high quality goods superstore that sells everything. Well, so he had no idea what to do, but it occurred to him, well, I could draw a picture of what I think it should look like. So he kind of drew a picture of it, and he took a photograph on his phone of the picture. And then he worked as a sort of a motivational speaker, and he's off giving a motivational speech. And this woman comes up to him, and she loved the speech, and she was very helped. And he said, oh, that's nice. What are you doing? She said, oh, I'm a buyer for John Lewis in the home goods department. He's like, really? He said, what? He takes out his phone. What do you think about this? And she goes, well, that's great. Hey, and he said, well, I'd love to get into John Lewis. She says, well, here's the process you would have to go to. And now, again, if he wasn't playing the Creating the Impossible game, if he wasn't just following inspiration and being willing to take it as it comes instead of trying to make it happen, he probably would have been pretty put off, because it's like, okay, it's a minimum of a 6-month process and this and that, and you've got to have prototypes and a bunch of more stuff that he didn't know how to do. But he was just playing a game. So he kind of took that on advisement. He looked into getting a prototype made. It was going to cost thousands of pounds, and he wasn't interested in doing that because it's a game. Why am I going to spend all this money? Well, he bumps into somebody who makes prototypes, and they get really inspired because they can feel his inspiration, like Helen and I were talking about. They can feel the energy around it. Those of you who listened to the show with Mara Gleason last week, they can feel the oomph. And they go, you know what? I'll help you make this prototype. We'll do it at cost. So now he's got a prototype. And the story goes on. We'll put the videos up on Facebook over the next few weeks. But a series of things that you could not possibly have made into a business plan unfold. And he's off to John Lewis with the finished products on Friday, tomorrow, right? That's effortless success. Not that he didn't do stuff. He did do stuff. Not that he didn't even spend a bit of money. He did spend a bit of money, but a fraction of what you would expect somebody with no experience to have to do to take something from idea to reality in a very short space of time. That's what inspiration does. That's what a willingness to do what there is to do and not worry about what you don't know what to do does for you. That's what's focusing on the love of the game versus what you think the game will bring you does. That's what allows us to experience effortless success. I didn't start the story for this reason, but as long as I'm here, Creating the Impossible, it's a 90-day program beginning in January. You can learn more about it at creatingtheimpossible.net or at michaelneal.org/impossible. And all you need is an impossible project, something that you would love to bring into the world, something that you would love to see come into being, but you're pretty sure that there's no way you could do it. And let me do the rest. Let the program do the rest. And no, I am not saying you will absolutely have it in 90 days. In fact, it's supposed to be impossible. The odds of you having it in 90 days are very low. But oh my goodness, the things you'll learn, the fun you'll have, the miraculous coincidences and synchronicities you'll experience, and your relationship with the creative process will change. I can promise you that. And for those of you who are interested in taking it further, you can also add in the Creativity Weekend, which is a live weekend I'm going to be leading in Los Angeles in December 10th and 11th, but you can do it online, virtually, you can kind of book them together as a package. So check out michaelneal.org. It's got the information about the Creativity Weekend and Creating the Impossible. And as I say, if you follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/mneal, it's the Michael Neal, I guess they call it a fan page. I don't know. But if you go there, you'll be able to, over the, at some point in the next month, we'll get the videos up of David talking about, just this amazing experience. And he's one of many, but it's a particularly fun one because it's going on now in real time. Should we go back to the phones? Let's go back to the phones and let's talk to Mary Jo in Vermont. Mary Jo, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to...
Oh, you're my Mary Jo.
I am your Mary Jo and you're my Michael.
Oh, nice to hear your voice. I'm so sorry. I heard you lost your mom?
Yeah, so mom passed the other day, but I just wanted to share some of the blessings and some of the gratitude I have with your teachings and with our connection to mind and to wisdom and to the way forwards.
Please, yeah.
So, I had the opportunity to, she passed quickly, but I had the opportunity to connect with endless possibilities of loving her and being a part of her life, and it's really a direct result of the teachings and sharing the principles with you and with everybody else. And it's an opportunity that I am very grateful for. She passed when I was out of town, and I had a chance to say goodbye and to be a part, or just to say, hey, Mom, have a safe trip. She was going to take a helicopter ride. She had a heart attack, and she said our pact was not to worry about each other, and that God was in charge, and there was a wiser way forward for all of us. So she had a stroke in the helicopter or a bleed and never recovered, but I was at her bedside when she passed in the hospital, and she waited for me to fall asleep before she passed. So I believe that our spiritual connection with Source and with right action and just being present and loving and a part of my family's life is a direct result of staying connected with you and our circle of community. So thank you, Michael. And I just picked up the phone. I'm sitting here looking at in her house with her spirit. And I can't believe I'm talking to you. So,
oh, well,
love it.
Thank you. I'm really glad you called in because somebody told me, and I you've been on a list of emails I need to send, and how much nicer that we could actually talk.
Absolutely. Thank you, Michael. And wishing you a connection in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
Good day. Bye.
Bye. I won't overly embarrass her, but Mary Jo is an angel. She travels around the world to some of the most dangerous places in the world, and she's a nurse. And she helps people who really need help in places where most angels fear to tread. So I'm very touched that she phoned in. Well, that's thrown me off my game to know where to go from there. Well, let's see. The secret ingredient for effortless success. Well, how about this? How about we talk about you? Now, there's a quote that I used to share all the time, and it's a quote from a man named Howard Thurman. And Howard Thurman has this sort of unique distinction of being the bridge. He was a reverend, and he was the bridge between Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King. So he went to India in the 30s and studied with Gandhi, and then he taught at, I think it was Howard University, but he taught at the seminary where Martin Luther King trained to be a minister. And the quote of his that I've always loved is, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do that." Because what the world needs is people who've come alive. Well, here's why I stopped sharing that quote a few years back. And here's why I've started again in the last few months. See, what I noticed is that people, me included, heard that quote, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do that." It makes it sound like there's a thing, right? There's one thing that you can do, and if you do that thing, you'll come alive, but if you do other things, you will not. In other words, it makes it sound like the universe works from out to in, that what we do on the outside creates our experience on the inside. Now, that is the direct opposite of what I've come to see, that actually we live in 100% inside-out reality, hence the book, The Inside-Out Revolution, that our thought in the moment creates our feeling in the moment. Our thought-created world is the world that we inhabit and experience, moment by moment, day by day. Now, it's fluid because it's made of thought, but it feels real because part of the nature of thought is that we experience it as though it's really happening. Now, inspiration is part of what I sometimes talk about as a world of deeper feelings. And I mean deeper feelings as distinct from emotions. And it's not a real distinction, but I'm going to try and make it anyways. You can be sad and grateful, and you can be happy and grateful, and you can be a little bit scared and grateful, and you can be optimistic and grateful. Gratitude is a deeper feeling in the sense that it doesn't require you to have only one emotion going on when you feel it. I talk often about well-being instead of happiness, because happiness, the way most people think of it, is the opposite of sadness. And like all emotions, it has its opposites, and it comes and it goes, and we ride the roller coaster. Well-being is a way of describing that space within us that all the emotions arise and fade away inside of. Well-being is what I sometimes call the simple feeling of being alive, what the theosopher Sid Banks called pure consciousness, uncontaminated by our personal thinking. Well, inspiration is one of the deeper feelings. It can be present irrespective of your mood. It can be present irrespective of your circumstances. Viktor Frankl got inspired at the unquenchable magnificence of the human spirit inside a concentration camp during World War II. People have been inspired to great acts of courage and heroism and love and kindness in the midst of the worst depths of poverty and abuse and unfairness that society can mete out. But you can also be inspired on a yacht sipping champagne. You can also be inspired when your business serves its millionth customer. You can also be inspired when one person calls in to thank you for sharing an experience with them that you want to thank them for. What makes you come alive is the life force itself. What makes you come alive is inspiration, the animating spirit, that which marks the difference between the living and the dead. So the reason I've gone back to sharing the quote is because what the world needs is people who've come alive. But what makes you come alive is your openness to life, is your willingness to participate in life, to engage with life. And life is what is happening now. What's the old bumper sticker? Life is not a dress rehearsal. I was interviewing the Hay House World Summit. Next year is going to be awesome. I kind of hate to tease it because you can't listen to it till May of 2017. But just the interviews I did, I've been doing interviews for it for 3 or 4 years now. And just the interviews I got the chance to do this year, just yesterday I interviewed Caroline Mace. We had an amazing conversation about God and the devil and vampires and zombies and the Chicago Cubs. And one of the conversations I had was with Ann Wilson Schaaf, who some of you might know as the author of Meditations for Women Who Do Too Much. And she just did such a beautiful job of expressing the sacredness of life, what it is to have a respect for life, to honor and respect life, not to worship it out of fear, but to honor and respect it out of love. And she gave a definition of spirituality. I posted this on the Facebook page that I just loved. And she said, spirituality is to participate fully in whatever it is that's in front of you. Well, to me, that's as good a definition of inspiration as I could find. Inspiration is to participate fully with whatever's in front of you now. It's to engage fully with the human being that you're going to talk to next when the show's over. It's to engage fully with the work that you have on today, whether it's work that you would normally think of as important work or work that you would think of as busy work. It's the willingness to engage with the dishes when it's time to do the dishes, with the negotiation when it's time to negotiate, with the sale when it's time to sell. It's the willingness to participate fully with whatever is in front of you now, and now, and now, and now. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive. Your full participation with whatever's in front of you now, and go do that. Go participate fully with whatever is in front of you now. Because what the world needs is people who've come alive, who've woken up at a deeper level to this life force inside us, to this intelligence inside us, to this spirit inside us, in spirit, inspiration, the spirit within, the in-breath. Because what always follows the in-breath? The exhalation, the creation. If you breathe in and breathe in and breathe in and you never breathe out, you're going to pass out. And if you try to breathe out and breathe out and breathe out and breathe out, you're going to pass out. But there is a perfect harmony that already exists in nature between the in-breath and the out-breath, between the inspiration and the creation, between receiving and giving. And when you live in harmony with that, you're going to do really, really well. And your success is going to seem at times effortless, even though you're doing everything that needs to be done. And that's the secret ingredient for effortless success. So it has been an absolute delight as always. I think next week we've got this little holiday called Thanksgiving here in the States, so you'll get a replay, but I'll be back with you live in December. Check out michaelneal.org, and until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.